Republic of Cuba.
Where in spring you still have to wear your coats and your scarves and have your heater lit. We meet also on a Friday. Very cold, you late to wake up. But as they say, choppy chop. We have only one item for the agenda today.
Two.
Actually. One is about a briefing from government about programs on GMOs. And it says various pieces of legislation spread along a number of departments, agriculture, foreign fisheries, health, trade and industry, science and technology. And rural development. As a result, we had requested to invite those respective departments. As a result of that, we have a joint committee session in Parliament. Typically on a Friday, it has to be a bit of an awkward day for any committee to sit. A number of members, as a result of that, have apologized. As is the norm, only written apologies are accepted. And the rest, it has to be a hearsay. We did hear, you know, that so-and-so was not going to be around. For instance, we did hear that Mr. Ram was not going to come. We also did hear that Mrs. Paliso was not going to come. But these are not apologies that are accepted, that are recognized. It's a hearsay, as I say. We certainly do have apologies from some of the departments. The Director General from Rural Development has since tendered his apology. Are there people from the department? I see only Ralph, but we're looking for people from the department. Welcome, sir. You certainly will introduce yourself. Not now. Not now. We also have another apology from the Director General from Health, Ms. Matoso. Who is also not able to come through. And Dr. Play is said to be expected to be here. Is he here? She here, sir. You, Dr. Play. Oh, you...
Amanda Sayela. Okay. I'm the Chief Director of Food and Medicines Regulation.
We will come to that point. So you representing a representative of another representative. Well, there's a set of sessions expected to take course on the matters we are about. And this matter also has since generated a lot of interest on a number of stakeholders. Hence, we also have changed from the smaller venue to this bigger venue. We trust that we shall be able to consume or absorb, I guess that's the proper English word, am I right? English being a seventh language. We certainly did receive a petition which was supported by Mrs. Dudley. Where is she? She's not here. Mrs. Dudley, one of the members of parliament, you'll have to excuse me, you know, the honorable thing gets to be too long for me. I'm sure by now we have since become accustomed. You know, we're a very easy committee in our culture, you know. But in that same easiness spirit, we respect each other. And that is what is important. The petition has since come through. It has to be entertained. But on top of it all, we certainly have had a number of people wanting to come through. Mr. Lombard last year, if not yet before last, did bring his colleagues from one professor from Switzerland last year beginning. And he has been a very ardent supporter and very keen on matters that we are about. But we thought it wise that before, and we've had very, you know, robust discussions with Dr. Kobana on the same matters from health, who had also shown a very keen interest on these matters. It's a pity that is not here, and also Dr. Ngobo from Science and Technology. He's also not here. We did talk yesterday. He was telling me that he would also make it to here. But we thought it wise that we should have, as government, a briefing before we get, you know, anybody else to come through. We shall accordingly schedule, you know, for those two other sessions, both the petition and entertain that, and also the hearing, with a number of players that have actually shown an interest on this matter. So those are the three areas, or rather, sessions that one, you know, is referring to. Okay, then that would be the first item. The second item is we agreed on Tuesday that we should bring before here, before us here, our program for adoption. I'm looking at the numbers here. That's those are the two areas for our agenda for today, as we agreed upon. Okay, I take it that is fine, members, that we can go ahead and allow the department. The program before us today is, well, welcome everybody, those that have just arrived and those that have been here. As mentioned, that we have those two items. And then we have the following departments, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Science and Technology, following, and also Health Department, and also Trade and Industry. The intention is to adjourn this meeting at 1 o'clock. So whatever we do, we should also do that. We should also do, having at the top of our mind, the fact that by 1 o'clock we need to be out of here. I know Mrs. Nyalungu has an apology. She's going to connect to Mpumalanga, 3 o'clock in Johannesburg, or out of Johannesburg. I think he said by 10:30 to 11. That's the only apology that we received as of yesterday. Members, without a waste of time, we shall then give the department, according to the times set here, you're supposed to start at 9:15 until 9:20. time now is almost 9:12 according to my watch here. But I'm sure we can do justice without having to take all of that the time. And again, bearing in mind that we are down to 1 o'clock. And members have to be traveling. Also getting to know that it is election time, constituencies of uppermost, you know, of importance this time around. So that, So just quickly, the brief introduction of the members who are here, and the officials from the department are going to, as and when that department is called upon, it shall introduce its team. Okay, Mrs. Stein.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning to everyone. My name is Annette Stein, and I'm a member of the Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries Portfolio.
Good morning, my name is Janita Kloppers-Lodens, and I'm from Science and Technology Portfolio Committee.
We couldn't hear at all, Mama.
Sorry. Let me start again. Good morning, everybody. My name is Elizabeth Bilusa Muswani, a member of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Morning. I'm Eunice Milungo, member of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Morning. I'm Nsikayazo Tobukhulu, member of Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, as well as Rural Development and Land Reform. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sizakele Msweli, a member of Health Committee.
Mrs. Stein is from Eastern Cape. Mrs. Mrs. Kloppers-Lodens. I know her, she's from Gauteng. Ngosi Qebekhulu is from KZN. Umama Philis Muswane, she's from Limpopo. Umama Nyalungu, she's from Mpumalanga. Umama Msweli, she's from KZN. I know you. I'm mentioning all of that so that we get a sense as to sort of who is here among us.
Thank you, Chairperson. On behalf of the Director General, I would like to apologize for his absence. Today he is traveling tomorrow, to the best of my understanding. And he requested us to tender his apology.
Sorry, did you say on behalf of the Director General?
Just
one quick second. I don't know. This question was raised last time we met, and then I had to leave. I did think about it as I had been away, as to when is the DG starting and so on. The DG is starting beginning of October, so that there's no confusion. The DG has been appointed on the first portion fisheries, but DG starts on beginning of October. I just thought I needed to explain that at the time, but unfortunately I had to rush out for another meeting. Okay, thanks.
We also thank you, the person and honorable members, for giving us this opportunity to conduct this briefing. But before I introduce my team, I must indicate that we do have, as you indicated, a number of collaborating departments and also leaders in terms of the science on GMOs that will be conducting the presentations for ease of presentation, so that we are in a position to respond properly to the particular questions. Dr. Yafta will be doing the presentation from agriculture point of view, and he will be supported by experts that he will introduce, including the registrar for GMOs. And if you allow me, Chair, I'll ask Dr. Jafta to do the presentation, but introduce the people who will be supporting them. But we also have support staff from the Office of the Director General, Wesley and Bitso, who are with us from Agriculture. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, members of the public, as well as other colleagues from other departments. It's a privilege to be here this morning and to give this presentation. And it is our wish that this presentation to the Joint Portfolio Committees would elucidate some of the misconceptions around the system itself, and also then strengthen the areas where there may be potential weaknesses. As indicated by Dr. Murisani, we have with us the registrar for the GMO Act. We were interacting with another group on GMO matters yesterday, and therefore she was already in Cape Town, and we felt it appropriate to also expose to this forum. So it is Nompumelelo Mkonza, who is just right behind me, Chief. I'll get right into the presentation, as you indicated that we have limited time, so I'll just dive into it. The Act that governs the use or governs all activities involving genetically modified organisms is the GMO Act. It's an Act of 1997, which was implemented in 1999. It underwent further amendments recently, and the Amendment Act was implemented in 2010. The objective of the Act is obviously to ensure that all activities are carried out in such a way to limit any potential negative impact on the environment, on human, as well as animal health. Broadly, the Act also then provides for other measures such as how to effectively manage waste, which criteria needs to be set for risk assessment and risk management. The Act allows for a broad range of stakeholders to be involved, and mainly these are the following: the Department of Science and Technology, ourselves, Department of Environmental Affairs, Health, as well as Trade and Industry. Department of Labor is also provided for in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And then if one considers the new piece, the amended Act, it also provides for the Department of Arts and Culture to be part of the decision-making framework, because we also do consider potential socio-economic impacts which may arise from the use of genetically modified organisms. The respective departments would obviously give you some sense of their mandate, but Science and Technology, they have the National Biotechnology Strategy, which provides a broad policy framework for the potential use of biotechnology in South Africa. And you would be aware that GMOs is but one product of biotechnology. The department itself, is the custodian of the GMO Act. We are also the competent authority for Cartagena Protocol on Biosafety. This is a protocol that emanates from the CBD. And the department, together with the Department of Environmental Affairs, shares in the administration of the Cartagena Protocol on Biosafety. While ourselves are the competent authority responsible for the day-to-day administration of our obligations under the protocol, the Department of Environmental Affairs is the national focal point, because they are also the focal point for the CBD. The Cartagena Protocol on biosafety, just sets the rules and procedures to be followed in the transboundary movement of GMOs. If one considers the literature, you would always see that the protocol refers to living modified organisms. In our context, we do feel it is synonymous with GMOs, because in the way in which an organism is defined within the Act. So you would hear interchangeably people referring to LMOs, while others would be referring to GMOs. Environmental Affairs was not present today. also has the mandate for the broad environmental impact assessments and safety assessments, and therefore their National Biodiversity Act or National Environmental Biodiversity Act is important in the consideration. Health is, and they would expand on the mandate as well as Department of Trade and Industry. But you can see from the pieces of legislation that are listed there that it is a comprehensive piece of the regulatory framework is comprehensive, and all these pieces of legislation ultimately assist us in reaching the objectives of the Act, in that to ensure that all activities are carried out in a safe and responsible manner. I'm going to go then into regulatory process itself. The registrar, who is Mpumi, would receive, is responsible for the administration and would receive an application. An application would be assessed by a group of technical experts who would then make a recommendation to the Executive Council. And this is just further detail of what such an assessment process would involve. So you have the advisory committee, and the advisory committee the Act allows for 10 scientists to be present on the advisory committee, but there are also an additional pool of scientists which are available to assist in the evaluation of the applications. So the advisory committee also then has these subcommittee members which assist. So together, they do a thorough assessment of an application and provide a recommendation to the executive council. Based on that recommendation, as well as considering the respective legislative policy and legislative mandates of the departments, the council may either decide to approve or reject an application. Obviously, this is an administrative system, and in line with administrative justice principles, the applicant or any person that feels influenced or impacted upon by such a decision may lodge an appeal to the minister. Along the evaluation process, the evaluation process is also, the length of the evaluation process is also prescribed in the Act. So for different activities, there are different timelines within which the department needs to make a decision. This just gives you some summary of the scientific expertise available within the advisory committee as well as the subcommittee. You would have those who have expertise in agricultural biotechnology, in bacteriology, allergenicity, which is particularly important from the health perspective, entomology and ecology, and that those are specifically important for the environmental impacts. And then for agriculture, those who have expertise in plant breeding, plant physiology, plant biochemistry, etc. Remember, the Act provides for all GMOs. So sometimes those GMOs may also be vaccines, and therefore we also have scientists who are trained in the area of that vaccine development. Clearly, in that regard, the linkage with Department of Health, especially with NGC, is relevant. The Executive Council, which is the decision-making body, is appointed, as I've indicated, by the Minister of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, and the composition is as follows. It's DAF, it's DIA, Science and Technology, DTI, Health, Labour, Arts and Culture, which is provided for the new Act, as well as the chairperson of the advisory committee. And this brings us that very important linkage with the advisory committee. The duty of the council is to advise the minister on all matters involving GMOs. So it's not just on the application itself, but if one considers the Act, it does allow the council broad powers to advise the minister on all matters. However, one item that the council is obviously should be very competent in is to advise on those applications. The decisions of the council is based on consensus, and considering the number of departments involved, you would immediately realize that it is not always easy to come to consensus. However, in the absence of consensus, an application or an activity is obviously denied, so it is then not approved. The council also, at their own request, would engage interest groups or the applicants as and when it sees it fit. However, the council makes the minutes of its deliberations available to the public through the departmental website. However, the confidential portion of those minutes are removed in such a publication. Currently, the GMOs that are approved for use in South Africa are the following. Now, we have three different categories of approvals: those for commercial release or general release. Unlike in other systems around the world, South Africa's commercial or general release is always still conditional. If one compares other regulatory systems, once it reaches commercial stage, there's no more regulation, but we still maintain some form of regulation. So for maize, at the moment, we have where there's a combination of insect resistance as well as herbicide tolerance. There are four different GMO events, and you would see the years in which they have been approved. For GM maize that has herbicide tolerant trait, there are two events. For insect resistance, there are three. And the same holds for cotton. There are two cotton events where it's a combination of insect resistance and herbicide tolerance, and then we have this respective individual events. And then for soybean, we have herbicide tolerant approved. So for these events, it can be imported, it can be planted, and it can be used as food and feed in South Africa. Often, if one reads popular media, they are reference to other products. However, this is the only GMOs approved with South Africa. GMOs approved for commodity clearance. This is the use of the specific GMO for food and feed purposes. Now, obviously, you would see that there could potentially be an overlap between those for commercial release and those for commodity clearance. And this is the list that we have approved in South Africa. The full list is also available on the department's website. The difference between commodity clearance and general release: commodity clearance is not approved for general planting in South Africa, so it can be imported and it goes directly into the commercial chain. And then there are obviously a number of field trials ongoing. This is just a list of field trials approved currently between 2012 and 2013, so some may be ongoing. There are trials ongoing for vaccines, and the trait they are looking at is for to address TB, as well as there are HIV vaccines which are also being trialed in South Africa. And then there are newer traits being assessed for maize as well as for cotton. Beyond a general release, obviously the import and the export still needs to be regulated as prescribed under the Act. So if it is a general release or if there is a commodity clearance, the trade is still monitored through import and export permits. Then there's another category in terms of contained use, and these activities take place in the laboratories, and there are different laboratories across South Africa which are registered under the Act, and I've already mentioned the trial release, general release, as well as the commodity. Chairperson, one of the concerns was specifically around a commodity clearance application for GM maize DAS 4027-8-9, which is an application
received from Dow Agro Sciences, and therefore would like to pause in terms of what happens with a commodity clearance application. Once again, a commodity clearance application is for the use of the GMO in food, feed, and processing, and therefore only food, feed, food and feed safety data is considered and no environmental data is considered. In an attempt to limit in an attempt to manage commodity imports into South Africa, the department together with industry has developed an SABS standard to limit the environmental contact of commodity imports. Commodity imports is also important to ensure that South Africa has access to other markets, because obviously within the regulatory systems there's always the risk of asynchrony between the approvals we have with our trading partners. And I would like to quickly refer to or explain what asynchrony is. Using the example of our trade with Argentina as an example. Argentina may have in their production GMO events A up to S, which is being produced. Remember, in consignment, South Africa would receive, you would have all of those events present because there's no segregation of events, okay? So you have a co-mingled consignment that comes in. If we then do not have events E and F approved in South Africa, it may mean that we may import a GMO of which we don't have any safety data. So the problem is, the minute asynchrony comes into being between trading partners, we cannot import from that particular country because there may be GMOs in a consignment of which we don't have any idea. And therefore, commodity clearance is a certain class of approval that actually ultimately facilitates trade and gives us access to a number of markets. However, always the food and feed safety data is always considered. But because the thing is not going to go into the environment, we do not consider any environmental data. The specific application that we've received for Dow Agro, and the name, the code there is DDAS42789, it was for a commodity clearance application. This specific GMAs has been modified to be resistant to the herbicide 2,4 dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly referred to as 2,4-D. The GMO was created by the inclusion of a protein, and in this case the protein was an enzyme that is able to degrade the 2,4-D into an inactive form of the herbicide 2,4-dichlorophenol DCP. This means that in the production of this GMA, a herbicide spraying regime may be applied with the herbicide 2,4-D without negatively impacting on the growth of the maize. As part of our system, a public notification was placed in the Sunday Times, the City Press, and the Report newspapers of the 4th of March. Okay? The Act prescribes, and this is just a copy of what that notice looked like. The Act prescribes that the public notice should include a reference to who the applicant is, what type of application it is, as well as the origin of the gene, and then it must call for comments, and it will also indicate the deadline for the comments. So you would see that there's an indication that the applicant is Dow Agro Sciences, the type of application is for commodity clearance, the origin of the gene, it says it was isolated from Pseudomonas, it says what the gene is, that it is a gene that will effectively give tolerance to the herbicide in maize plants, and you would see that it tells the interested parties to obtain the application from the registrar and also to submit comments to the registrar within 30 days after the publication of this this notice. The application we did not receive any public comments on this application. However, we did receive an access to information request from the African Centre for Biosafety for the full decision document, and that decision document was made available to ACB in July. So that is the presentation on from agriculture in terms of the system, the regulatory system, as well as a brief introduction to the actual Dow AgroSciences commodity clearance application. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Schachter. Once again, you know, the extent in which interest has been shown on this talks to a number of players that have actually been writing and petitioning Parliament. And cutting across all of those interests has been a matter related to transparency. We are also dealing with another related matter that talks to labeling. It started off as we all know about the research that took place by UWC and Stellenbosch. And that research has since culminated towards a collaboration between three departments, agriculture, health, and trading industry. As we speak now, talk that is doing rounds out there, since elevated that meat labeling into food labeling. So as I'm saying, this labeling matter is a matter equally relevant to what we are talking about, because it talks about, you know, traceability of whatever food content that shall be found wherever is packaged. Thanks for that. We shall take to the rest of other departments before we engage in discussion. Otherwise, we can be here for even longer than we shall have anticipated. As we speak now, we shall then give over to the Department of Science and Technology.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to introduce Ben Durham. He is the Chief Director for Biotechnology and Health Innovation from the Department of Science and Technology. He is also the departmental representative of DSC on the council, and also vice chairperson of the council. So, Ben.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of Parliament and colleagues, thank you very much for the opportunity to address this committee. As requested, we are speaking specifically to the role in the administration, utilisation and management of GM food. As background to our role, I just wanted to mention a little bit, in a little bit more detail, our role that Dr. Yafta has referred to, that we are the custodian of the National Biotech Strategy of 2001. This strategy effectively talks to the development of responsible biotechnology, of which a component is the development of genetic engineering. The main agents developed under the strategy were a number of biotech regional innovation centers, including an agency called Plant Bio. We also developed something called the Public Understanding of Biotechnology Program, which is promoting an understanding and awareness of biotechnology in the broader public. And we also created a biosafety platform, which I'll explain a little bit more. the strategy, the national biotech strategy is quite dated now. It's 2001. We are currently developing a new strategy which builds on the achievements and experiences from the earlier phase, and it is likely to be called the bioeconomy strategy. It includes three components, biotechnology for three different sectors, agriculture, health, and the industry and environment sectors. And DSD will be building on the innovation competencies in the innovation system, supporting strategic science programs, and coordinating innovation actors across the national system of innovation. So then coming back to specifically the presentation that was requested, our role in the administration of GM food, as Dr. Yafta has mentioned, we are a member of the Executive Council, so we participate in the decision-making system of the GMO Act, and I happen to be the Vice Chair of the Council. The perspective that we bring to the Council focuses particularly on, but is not limited to, the National Biotech Strategy, biosafety and biotechnology capacities and competencies, and also looking at the socioeconomic considerations related to the introduction of GMOs. When it comes to the utilization of GMO foods, the Department of Science and Technology doesn't have any specific uses that we manage as a department. We're all obviously consumers. But we did assist with the Consumer Protection Act Commissioner. A task team was set up to determine guidelines for GMO labeling, and we participated in that process, and our particular perspective there is that labels do promote awareness, so it's aligned with our public understanding of biotechnology program, but nevertheless the approach to be adopted through the regulations need to be done quite carefully to avoid costs and to avoid inappropriate impacts. The third element, the management of GM food, there are certain areas that we do specifically contribute to here. Firstly, providing expert advice, genetic engineering and biotechnology are science fields, and we have created, as I mentioned, the Biosafety South Africa platform, which is a state-funded platform that provides expert advice to government and to industry and to society as a whole. They have provided a number of reports, which some of which are listed here. I'm not going to go through them all, but I'll just give a couple of examples. They have provided a report on separation strategies between GM and non-GM maize to prevent co-mingling, mixing of the GM and non-GM. They produced a regulatory roadmap to advise industry on commercializing a GM crop in South Africa. They provided a report on how to go about registering a GMO facility that allows for research on genetic modification, and so on and so on. The next component, also the management and also providing expert advice, is providing for training and capacity development. The Biosafety South Africa platform is about to offer the first South African accredited biosafety risk assessment course that will take place in November of this year. They've also organized national biosafety workshops in collaboration with the International Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries as part of the South African-Argentinian bilateral. They have assisted with the development of an African guidance for a fit-for-purpose regulatory framework for GMOs and have done a number of presentations and talks to various interest groups. The third element, particularly through Biosafety South Africa, we have been supporting strategic biosafety science projects where there may not be sufficient available information that is readily available, so we have supported research to the value, it's slightly in excess of this now, but it's a minimum of 7 million rand over the last few years that has been invested in strategic biosafety research projects These include studies on the effects of biotechnology maize on selected non-target arthropods, amphibians, and annelids, the effect of GM crop residues on various, freshwater snail, the frog, and they've also looked at a refuge in a bag strategy for insect-resistant management, and so on. The last element that we have supported in the management of GM food is promoting public awareness. We have created the Public Understanding of Biotechnology Program that is hosted at the South African Agency for Science and Technology Awareness, which is part of the National Research Foundation. This program provides a number of activities which are there to promote public awareness of biotechnology, including training in what biotechnology actually is. These are provided to the public, a certain amount of media engagement, critical thinker sessions on relevant topics in biotechnology, science communication workshops. One of the issues that we have to deal with is that the language scientists speak is often not accessible to the broader public, so there are training sessions for scientists on how to make their language more accessible. Profiling the public understanding of biotechnology at higher education institutions, support for biotechnology at the various science centers around the country. They participate in exhibitions and conferences and fora, and we are currently, through the pub program, preparing for a second public awareness survey of the South African public. How aware is the public in South Africa of biotechnology? So those are the main elements, Chair, of the Department of Science and Technology in administration, utilization, and management of GM food. And I just want to leave my final slide is that there is a vast amount of research that has taken place around the world on biotechnology and biosafety, and these are some of the comments that have been made from some of the authoritative sources, which effectively shows that genetically modified organisms are no more risky than conventional plant breeding technologies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Obviously food for thought. Without waste of time, we shall allow Department of Health.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Member. My name is Mandy Faila, from the National Department of Health, and Ms. Penny Campbell, the expert on this area, will be giving our presentation on our role. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Members of the Public, as well as colleagues. As has been mentioned, I'm Penny Campbell. I'm the Acting Director in the Department of Health for Food Control, and I'm going to give you the briefing on what is the Department's role with regards to GM, but also looking at it more broadly in terms of the impacts of some of the aspects relating further on after registration event has happened. In terms of the outline of the presentation, I'm firstly going to look at our legislative framework in terms of our mandate, and then what are our considerations from the Department of Health side in terms of nutrition and food security, food safety, biosafety, as well as pesticide reviews, and then I'll speak a bit to our monitoring activities and then give you a conclusion. In terms of our legislative framework, we have the Health Act of 2003, which requires the minister to endeavor within available resources to protect, promote, improve, and maintain the health of the population of South Africa. From this mandate also comes the mandate of the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics, and Disinfectants Act. Although published in 1972, it has been amended recently up until 2009 to bring it in line with constitutional arrangements and arrangements within the mandatory now governing the country. But the overall mandate of that Act is to forbid the sale of foodstuffs, cosmetics, and disinfectants that may be detrimental or harmful to health. From a food control perspective, we focus mainly on foodstuffs issues, so that's what we're going to be dealing with today. Then in terms of nutrition and food security, which I think is an important or critical component for our country, is that we always want to have positive health outcomes, and that is mainly based on availability of food and also the optimal utilization of the food within the body. So it's important to have a good nutritional strategy. From that perspective, maize is a safe food in our country. It is ranked as the most commonly eaten foodstuff in food consumption surveys that have been conducted. And because of this, it has been identified as one of the food vehicles that we will address undernutrition in the country through our food fortification program, where we fortify maize meal as well as bread flour with micronutrients, because these are what assist in addressing the undernutrition aspects in the country. So therefore, the Department of Health considers food safety considerations critical to positive health outcomes for the general population, and in this instance, specifically for children, because maize is our targeted vehicle and children are the targeted population for dealing with the undernutrition and dealing with the stunting. Then in terms of food safety considerations, the World Health Organization has defined the term food safety, and I think we need to be clear on what we mean by food safety. They have defined it as food will not cause harm when eaten according to its intended purpose or use. Okay, so that's what we're always wanting to ensure, is when food is being eaten, it must not cause harm to the individual. So how do we look at it from a biosafety or biotechnology point of view? And this is in relation now to the GMO events that have been registered in the country. And the Department of Health has ensured safety assessment of the GMO events through, as Dr. Jaffe has already mentioned, we serve on the Executive Council of the GMO Act. That has been held by the Director of Food Control, who retired earlier this year. So at the moment, we are not serving on the committee, but that is being addressed. We will appoint somebody in the near future. What do we consider when we look at these events? One, will it be toxic if it's ingested, if it's eaten? Will it cause toxicity to the person who eats it? Will there be any allergic reactions to people if they eat it? What are the nutritional effects of a GMO event? Will it change the nutritional profile of the actual event? And will it change the composition of the actual foodstuff that is going to undergo this GMO event? What we have also tried to ensure is that the experts on those specific topics that relate to health outcomes are also serving on the advisory council that is mentioned by Dr. Jaffter. Are those topics then being dealt with and being assessed when the dossiers are assessed? When we look at our food safety risk management, we base our decisions on internationally accepted guidelines from the Codex Alimentarius Commission. Now, what is the Codex Alimentarius Commission? The Codex Alimentarius Commission is an international food standing setting authority that has been established by the joint bodies from the United Nations. And these are the Food and Agricultural Organization and the World Health Organization. These are the two main bodies from the UN that deal with food and health. So what is the mandate of the Codex Alimentarius Commission? It's to protect health of consumers and to facilitate international trade. And as a country, we are a member state to the Codex Alimentarius Commission. So our principle in risk analysis and risk assessment are based on the Codex principles that have been developed by the various member states to the Codex Commission. So GM foods available in South Africa have been through rigorous safety assessments that are based on international guidelines that have been set by the Codex Alimentarius. Now, in light of the events that have been registered, many of them have been registered to be resistant to herbicide or pesticides. So there is a concern that has been raised that perhaps because of this resistance or tolerance to pesticides, farmers might be increasing the amount of pesticide usage when they're using it on the GM maize. So firstly, to take you through the process of how we register pesticides in the country. Again, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is custodian of the Act 36 of 1947, which deals with all agricultural inputs. So that includes pesticides. When a pesticide is being registered in the country, it has to then be assessed from a Department of Health perspective in a two-step process. Firstly, we will look at a toxicological assessment. So we will look at this pesticide and see what are the adverse effects if a person was to ingest it. And based on that, what would be the maximum acceptable daily intake that would be permissible for this person to ingest this pesticide? So in the first step of the process, we will look at this toxicological assessment and determine the acceptable daily intake that gives you no human safety concerns. Then the second step in the process is that the company that wants to register this pesticide wants to register it on a specific commodity. So for example, in this case, it might be maize. What we would then do is an exposure assessment, and we will look at this based on international guidelines once again, but also incorporating what is the food basket or the food consumption pattern in the country. So we will look at a total expression of what is in the food basket and what would be the exposure if a person had to ingest this daily, and at what levels would be an acceptable level then permissible to be left on the foodstuff. And that's what we determine as a maximum residue limit on the foodstuff. We will then publish those maximum residue levels, or MRLs, in our regulation 246, published originally on 11th of February 1994, as an amendment. So based on that, what we did in 2012-2013, as part of our national sampling program, we asked the provinces and municipalities to take samples of maize at production level to check for pesticide levels. And we specifically looked at the pesticide glyphosate. And that is one of the pesticides that has been, one of the maize events has been registered to be resistant or tolerant to glyphosate. So based on that, we then assisted through the sampling run. What we found in the results that all the sample tested were found to be compliant. That is, there was no excessive exceedance of the maximum residue level set at 2 milligrams per kilogram in terms of the R246 of the 11th of February 1994. So in conclusion, in South Africa we have a very robust genetically modified organism registration and monitoring system. The Department of Health will ensure robust food safety assessment, the continued participation in the Executive Committee of the GMO Act. We will continue to participate in the Codex Alimentarius Commission so that we ensure that the standards that are being set at the international setting meets the needs of the South African population. We will also continue to confirm the pesticides, MRLs, through toxicological and exposure assessments, the process I explained to you earlier. And we will continue to monitor pesticide MRLs in various food commodities based on risk profiles. We will also continue our cooperation with the other government departments. That, in a nutshell, is what we do from the Department of Health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Penny Kemmel. Thank you. Without wasting any time, shall allow the trade and industry.
Chair, the presentation by the Department of Trade and Industry is made by Ndiso Botswana, and he will then give some perspective on the Consumer Protection Act.
It's Ndiso Botswana. Now, when you call somebody's name, that name has a meaning. Andiso, not Andiso. But when he says Andiso, it has a meaning. When he says Andiso, I don't know what that meaning is. Like somebody saying Mlungisi. It's Mlungisi. Thank you, sir.
Once again, thank you very much, honorable members. My name is Andy Botswana. I'm the director responsible for consumer land policy within the Department of Trade and Industry. The presentation, I must say, started explaining what are GMOs, which I think the Department of Agriculture has done very well. Our mandate actually stems from the statute, which is the Consumer Protection Act, 68 of 2008. That's where we derive our mandate. So I will propose that I do not waste this committee's time by explaining, as the Department of Agriculture has done, what GMO has. I think we all understand, which is what the first letter actually purports to do. It basically explains that these are plants that can be modified to increase their resistance to insects, diseases, and other pests, as Dr. Chapter has already explained. Can bear with me, Chair. I want to move to the relevant slides in for our department. As indicated, the Consumer Protection Act, it looks at the product labeling, and Section 24 of that particular act specifically requires that if a product or goods are produced using genetic modification, such as the minister is therefore endowed with powers to require the labeling of such products. Under that particular provision, the minister has indeed done so by issuing Regulation 7, which requires the labeling of the three main events which were approved, which the council, the GM Council under the Department of Agriculture has approved for commercialization. And those events are the production of maize, the production of cotton, and the production of soy. We have been advised that the imported canola oil is no longer, it was never really approved for commercialization, which is another subject. Having issued this notice, we then sought to work with our enforcement agency, which is the National Consumer Commission, which is responsible for the enforcement of the Act. The Commission had problems in enforcing the regulations, in the sense that it required the expertise of the Department of Science and Technology, as Ben has from the Department of Science and Technology has alluded to. And within this task team, it was then realized that the enforcement of the labeling requirement would actually be difficult, if not impossible, because this the regulations had actually required the labeling of ingredients and components. And we advise that, you know, it's going to be difficult for enforcement, because at the time when the food products are on a shelf, it will actually be impossible. There are no longer living organisms there, and therefore it will be impossible to actually enforce the Act. And so far, the Act requires the labeling of genetically modified organisms. And therefore, we were then forced towards the end of last year to try and amend that regulation to make it enforceable. One of the things that is the trend worldwide, Chair, is to actually allow for the adventitious presence or the accidental contamination of certain foods, and so as to make these regulations applicable. The DTI, through its research, and the International Comparison, taking also our commitments to the World Trade Organization in not introducing technical barriers to trade, or to pay attention to unintentionally introducing technical barriers to trade. We deemed it fair to that, and taking into account the aspect of consumer protection, we came to a conclusion that all goods that contain contain ingredients of 1% or less of genetically modified material can actually be labeled as GM-free. We then also thought or came to a decision that anything above 5% must actually be labeled as containing GMO. Many considerations went into this, Chair. Like I said, the issue of unintentional introducing technical barriers to trade. There was also the issue, Chair, of unintentionally, because we are aware that most of our people are actually not very much aware of the science. There was the issue of the food scare, that if, for example, everything now started to be labeled as containing without the proper knowledge and education, that people would actually shy away from such. We did also, Chair, pay attention to issues of cost, and if everything now started to have to be tested, then maybe perhaps that would have to an impact on costs. And if everything now had to be labeled with a lower threshold, say of 1%, everything costs may actually go up. We are aware of various arguments that actually such costs could be carried by those people who actually want GMO-free food. But we came to this threshold that anything below 1% can be labeled as not containing GM, because that is to allow for the accidental contamination. Anything above 5% should be, that's what we call compulsory labeling of such foods. Chair, we are now in the process of finalizing the regulations. This is a highly contentious issue, particularly on the issue of when we start labeling. We have received the advice from Science, Technology, Health, and the Department of Agriculture, and we continue to receive the input and comments from various stakeholders, which I must say to this committee, they are very diverse views, very strongly opposing views as to particularly on the issue which of the foods should be labeled. The three that have been approved for commercialization by the Department of Forestry, or are all foods that contain GM to be labeled? That's one of the highly contentious issues. And the second issue is the issue of the threshold, whether in fact we should not move away from the 5% or compulsory labeling and actually move to 1%, as is the case in other countries. But also our international comparative studies have shown that other countries that we trade with are actually using 5%. That is the role of the DTI chair, and we hope to issue the, in fact we intend to issue the final notice, which will make the issue of GMO labeling very clear and enforceable. We intend to issue it before the end of this month. So, thank you.
Mabukotwana, you are with the
Trade and Industry.
Or not you with him, but he is with you from the Consumer Protection.
That is correct.
What's his name again? He's going to introduce himself.
Yes, thank you.
So let's watch the space.
thank you, Chairperson. My name is Uwa Tote Tupasa. I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services at the National Consumer Commission.
Well, what we also did as an omission was not to invite the Environment Department. It has come to our attention. Rural development is not going to present. What has also become very clear is that once again, cooperation is emphasized. As we also have heard that literally each of these departments, they play a specific role in the equation. Agriculture Department literally registers and it takes care of anything that has to do with the content of any commodity that is going to be genetically modified. Certain technology looks more into research. Of course, also collaborating with your ARC, among others, and other research bodies, and also looks into awareness, and of course also talks more to the faculty themselves, that look after those processes. And of course, the health department looks pretty much to safety of food. I'm summarizing some of these things. And then your DTI talks pretty much to, guided by the Consumer Protection Act, on the labeling. I would imagine matters of traceability also would be taken care in that whole process. It's also revealing to hear that 72% of maize as of last year would have been GMO-based. Now these are the issues. Critically as well is the regulation that trading industry is coming up with or busy with. You see, the regulation gets to be very tricky, even for us here as members of parliament. Often, regulations are actually left for departments to do as they wish. But regulation literally resides here. It is here where we are to say yay or nay. But as I said, often regulation departments, they go out there and do as they wish. You hear later, you know, no regulation so and so and so on and so forth. Now, again, I repeat, it is a government breaking the committee of parliament. In other words, it is executive briefing parliament. And it is parliament that engages with the precinct. We are still to engage in a process where there are hearings, where everybody shall come and present his or her views on any matter insofar as the issues that we are about. But for now, we are only listening to what the government departments are saying or have to say, and then as members of parliament, we will then engage with those briefings. For now, that's where we are. That's what is happening. Anybody else and everybody else is an observer. As parliament committees and general parliament, is an open session where everybody can come and listen. If you have any views, you want to lobby and so on, quietly you sneak your notes to whoever you feel that that person can represent your views. Are we understood on this one? That's generally how it works. Okay, maybe then that shall give over to Dr. Ngobo to take us through the question and responses to the session. Thank you. Do you want to take a quick break? Okay, let's take a 10-minute break at the most. We shall also bear in mind that Mr. Nyarungu has to be leaving us very soon. The reason why I wanted us to continue it was because we wanted her to benefit as much as she can. That is the sole reason. That's fine. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for understanding. We are not breaking. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is very easy. It is just to mediate between the presenters and the committees of parliament that are presented here, are represented here, in form of a discussion, inputs and responses. I am the chairperson of Science and Technology. I'm Dr. Ngobo, as the chair introduced me. I'm sorry that I couldn't start with you due to other engagements. But I will immediately allow interaction inputs from members of the committees represented here to have their inputs. I'll suggest that the respondents should jot down the questions and their responses accordingly. I don't know how a chair wants you to be conducted randomly. Members should ask questions and the responses accordingly should come. I don't know how you want it to be done. So, according to the chair, he said we will allow the process to flow through. A question will come from all directions of committees, and responses accordingly will come through from all directions of respondents and the departments represented here. Let's hear the sessions. Since it will be difficult for me to know all of you by name, I will have to point you directly. I will say, give you a number. Number one, number two, number three, number four, you remember the number five, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ed Stang. I'm a member of the Agriculture Portfolio. Jim, I will ask the question to the different departments, starting with Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I noted that you mentioned that after you have published the no agro notice in the newspapers that you received no comments. Is that a normal trend? I'm just concerned, Chair, because is this because of the time frame that's too short usually for publications? Is your time frame usually just a month? In other publications previously, what is your findings? Do people comment on this, or do you only get anything afterwards? And then, Chairperson, I also would need to get more information. There was a mention that if a GMO is it's conditionally approved, there was a word mentioned, it means that you can retract it afterwards. In South Africa's case, how many cases have been after introduction have then been turned around, the decision that we cannot introduce it any longer? I would like to know about that. And in the Department of Science and Technology is mentioned, but it was also touched on with the Trade and Industry presentation, but science and technology, specifically the GMO labeling approach, needs to be carefully introduced and regulated to ensure appropriate impacts. My question would basically be to all the departments. I don't know who would answer it, because Department of Health and Department of Trade and Industry specifically needs to look at implementation of this. The reason why I'm asking this question is also because of the meat labeling scandal. At the time when we were discussing the meat labeling issue, we were told that we cannot test quantities of something in a foodstuff in South Africa. So when we label this, will we be able to test what percentage of GMO would be in the foodstuff? So will it help us to go through the labeling process and all of the other things if at the end of the day we cannot regulate that? So if Department of Health, Trade and Industry, and maybe Science and Technology, because it was specifically mentioned in your presentation, also can give me some advice on that, and how do we do that? Then just on the presentation of health, but it's actually a question to the Department of Agriculture. I asked them in the past on the registrations in terms of the Act 36. At one stage, the Department of Agriculture was very far behind on registration processes. I'm not sure if they're still far behind. I think you are, because I'm still getting queries from individuals who say that the department is very far behind. If you are falling behind, are we sure that we are getting a quality still done? I have a specific question that I won't ask here now, but with the registration of RB51 for brucellosis, there's a query regarding that. And I want to know how sure are we still that we don't fall behind on quality. I want the Department of Health input on this specifically also, because you do tests afterwards and in conjunction. Now, I was told, because it was part of your presentation, that you test the residue levels afterwards. So I wanted to check also with the Department of Health. Who else? Would the millers or the food companies also be required to do residue testing, for instance, if they buy maize and other foodstuff that we know is GMO modified in South Africa? Or is it only the Department of Health that will come and do some testing randomly every now and then? Or is there a requirement on millers and other people to also do that testing? Then I think my only question to the Department of Trade and Industry was around the labeling. What does it help if we do a labeling if we cannot test it in South Africa? And then the payment of appropriate fees in terms of the GMO Act. I just read in one of the slides here. What is that fee for? What is it used for? Is it used to do more tests? Is it used for science? Or what is that fee specifically for? And then if you can just tell me, I don't know who will be able to tell me this, but it says you're the only country in the world that allows GM varieties of its national staple food, white snows, to be grown commercially. How is it done in other countries then? If GM foods is really a very high percentage, especially of maize worldwide, why do you say only South Africa allow this to be grown commercially? What happens in other countries, especially USA? Don't they grow it commercially? Why is this statement in there? Thank you, Chair.
You know your numbers. You must just follow. Don't expect me to follow you up. After the honourable member has finished asking, then you take over according to your numbers. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to call by saying Chairperson, food security is the buzzword in production of these GMOs. We are told simply because we need to have enough food on our tables. So this is the route to go. Chairperson, my question would be on this one. That since you find that most European countries have banned the GM stuff from their shelves, and today you are told so far it is safe to consume. It's safe to have these GM seeds even planted in our soils. What advises our departments that South Africa should continue? Understand, Chairperson, these GMOs are mostly, the GMO stuff are mostly now supplied to the African countries, if I may say so. Understand, it was 2010 or 2011. It was banned, GMO maize was banned in Kenya and Zimbabwe too. They banned it simply because they felt it was not safe for their soils to have these seeds planted in their soils. So as to say, Chairperson, these crops are there, they're growing. There is that cross-pollination resulting from the bees that are known for taking pollen for their own livelihood. Chairperson, what effect does these have, these pollens from GM crops, have in the insects? If one may get clarity on the 22, Chairperson. And there was a point that the Chairperson, Honorable Johnson, made with regards to the labeling. I understand, Chairperson, in most first world countries, they have that privilege of having everything in their shelves labeled, so that consumers should have a choice of buying what they prefer to consume, rather than saying they buy whatever they find in shelves for their lives. Understand, in some cases, Chairperson, there is a book I read by Geoffrey Smith, which tells how these big companies like Monsanto have manipulated the media in order to sort of glorify these products. Because understand, this is a majority company in this business of Monsanto, glorifying the use of GMOs. But the end result, somehow, people have been affected. Some have even gone to challenge the producers as far as the use of these stuffs, Chairperson. If one may go further, Chairperson, just to say, I think it's high time that, although we are regarded as a third world country, it's high time that we now conscientize our consumers, what to eat, what not to eat, because if we were to say GMOs are there in order to provide a security for food security, if I may say, I understand if they have in some others side effects, they'll die early. As a result, who will be then this food security be meant for? If, say, there is a lot of food in the national shelves and few consumers are said to be going out to the shops to buy food. Just for the minute, I would like to pause there, Chairperson. Oh, maybe before I pause, one thing that I noted in the presentations, maize has been put as the sole GM, together with soybean. And if one looks at maize, maize is used mostly by the poorest of the poor who consume it in different ingredients. They could make porridge, they could make dry porridge, they could make whatever drink that they may have. Some is known as amaheu, which they drink. These GMOs, Chairperson, has been consumed by a majority of the poorest of the poor. Are we saying just because they are poor, they should be the dustbin of our country? No, thank you.
Next, another member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. We are talking about food security and food safety. But the way this GMO issue has, it's not for food security and food safety. It's not. And the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, I want to take it further from my colleagues. Said no comments were submitted by the public. And we must know that our people, most of them, these things were put in the newspapers, and our people, majority of this country, they don't read this. They don't read a disease press or whatever the report or whatever, most of them in the rural areas, because many of them are not educated. They prefer to hear from their radios, maybe even from their TVs in their homes. And I am aware that no public hearings were conducted concerning this issue, because here they say no comments were submitted from the public. They should have taken it to the people for public hearing, so that our people should know that there is this thing called GMOs, and somebody explain to them that the good and the bad about this thing. And what is surprising is that other countries, they've banned it. They don't want it. Why we take something which other countries resist? Why? It's because really South Africa is a dumping a country. We are crying about Brazilian chickens, and now our people must continue to eat other it's foods which other countries are refusing, even other African countries. There's been this thing. Why in South Africa we are eating? Now I want to come to the issue of labeling. It is very important. Just like we talked about the meat, and also this is for the Department of Health. When are we going to see things like foodstuffs in the shelves, in the supermarkets or with shops or kids or whatever supermarket? When are we going to see labeling explaining to say this food is like this, is GMOs, so that the consumer should have a choice? If I don't want to eat such food, I will buy a food which doesn't have a GMOs.
And you can see, you know, that's why we are suspecting. You can see South African girls, even boys, most of them, they have a, you know, plenty stomach, you know, their stomach are falling, you know, the shaking, and these things were not there before. They were not there before. And we are suspecting that maybe it's out of this GMO thing. We are suspecting. And moreover, here, see, this thing is too much in the maize. And the maize is the staple food of South African majority. We eat maize on daily basis. And the poor people, in the morning, they eat mutepa, maize on maize. During the day, porridge from maize. In the evening, porridge from the maize. Just imagine how much poison are they consuming. You know, really, we let's take it further to our people. Our people must be explained what this is all about. Otherwise, they will continue dying, eating, dying, eating, dying, eating, being big, 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 and they don't even have money to go to the gym, to the doctor, to the what, and they die because of heart attack, and high blood pressure, and sugar diabetes, and you know, really, I don't think, even though you are saying it's a good thing, I don't think it's a good thing. Since other countries are refusing it, it's not good. It's not good. Thank you.
I'm number 14. Do you agree? On science and technology, the presentation.
Can I raise a point of order, Chair? As we mentioned earlier on, clubbing is participation. Now, it is a briefing session by government departments for members of parliament to be the only ones participating. So if you are part of the guests and you are seen to be clapping, you are actually participating. It is not allowed. We thank you for cooperation.
Over and above what the chair said, it is a lobbying us parliament to already take decisions that she saw such a person said it correct and she said it wrong, which is a biased judgment. So allow us to be very fair in treating this matter. It's a very important discussion. It needs to be treated with all the justice it deserves. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On the presentation by the Department of Science and Technology, I would like to know how many research chairs have been allocated to this issue of genetically modified organisms, at which universities and on which products. Is there some more information available regarding research chairs? Now, unfortunately, some of the presentations, the slides weren't, or the pages weren't numbered. On my page 4, I started, the front page was page 1. The second paragraph reads, labels promote awareness, but GMO labeling approach needs to be carefully introduced and regulated to ensure appropriate impacts. Now, I'm going to ask another question on costs, the cost of labeling and so forth, but could you please elaborate on inappropriate impacts as opposed to appropriate impacts? Then on page 8 of this presentation, public awareness, I would like to know what the role of consumer councils are. And on a lighter note, tongue in the cheek, you've got a cartoon here, and I'm very, the message of a cartoon is also always very powerful, but I can't read this cartoon. The text is very faintly and printed and small. I would like to be able to read it and to understand it. Then on the presentation of the Department of Health, page 7, they've numbered the pages. Page 7, I think it links to a question asked by number 1. I'm not sure if it's the same question, but I would like to know, despite all the precautions, has it happened thus far that a GMO had to be withdrawn due to harm that was detected along the line of use? And if so, could you please give us some details and information regarding that? I think I've got a question on page 10 also. Second last one. The RFA has a very robust GMO registration and monitoring system. How does that compare to other countries, if we refer to our robust and monitoring system? The other one is the one by Trade and Industry, the second last page and the last page. On the second last page, the second bullet, if the good component or ingredient contains less than 5%, it may be labeled, and the other one, above 5%, the last one, must. Now, I would like to know what the cost then is, because you referred to the cost. What is the cost, the percentage of the cost? Because it seems to be that it becomes a great problem. But how big is this problem? What is the percentage of the final price? And then the last page is, why is there a distinction between all foods as opposed to some foods? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Number 5. The first one, I'm very concerned with the issue of the comments. The first part, it doesn't make sense that you put an advert with a very topical debate like this, and then there's no public comment. Yes, others can argue that the ordinary people on the ground didn't have information. But I understand that there will be academic institutions who have a direct interest in this, specialized institutions like NGOs who have a direct interest in this. And it amazed me that none of them really had an interest to contribute in the public dialogue in relation to this. And I think we must be told what could have been the reason is because the time given in relation to this public debate and public discourse. Because the clapping to me tells that they are public that are very interested in this. And I wonder, where were they when this advert was made? There might have been something that we did wrong. The second one, we are very concerned with the issue that you continue to only advertise, even in newspapers, English and Afrikaans. You understand, we have learned languages, other people listen to other languages. Why we are not advertising as broad as possible to address that particular aspect? The other question is that the amendments that Duff is talking about have been raising here, that have been amended on the Act of 1997. We need clarity what were the basis of these amendments and what were those amendments? Just briefly. Within that, I have noticed that as people were speaking, all of them, Dwarf, I arrived when they are about to finish, but also I was listening, that maybe even ourselves, the brief we gave, limited space for dialogue. Because everybody is just telling us about the roles they have, but not a critical analysis of the challenges that we are confronted with in relation to this. Because there has been a gap in this presentation. It does not trigger, it does not assist me, like, as a person who sits here, I'm a reverend, and I only know theology. Now, I'm not a scientist in relation to other scientists. Now, it doesn't help me. That's why, even in terms of our analysis, in terms of what a GMO is, we, instead of going this side, we're going that side. Because there's no
input that begins to say these are areas in which they are problematic in what we are dealing with. I would lift some few with my narrow listening in what you are saying. I am very concerned of our capacity in terms of research. Tell us, what are we doing in South Africa in terms of the research in this regard? And secondly, I've noted that the people who have monopoly over the patent rights are these big multinational companies that dominate this industry in terms of determining what is there. And they are given space to manipulate what is they think it's right for their dominance. And there is no localized development or institutionalized arrangement of engagement in that aspect. The big companies continue to dominate this. You are saying it yourself, but that multinational companies are at the center of this. But what about our local knowledge and everything in terms of engagement with this? That's one aspect of that. Explain to me, like, now from KwaZulu-Natal, in Port Elizabeth. Tell us, we are South Africans, are politicians. I always say we are master of none. We specialize in everything. But what effect, is it a positive development? Because I can read, even by the research and the brief that you are bringing, that there are some positives about the role of GMOs in food production. One, protecting some plants in terms of parasitic insects that might be there. We know that means it's vulnerable in some of the parasitic insects. It might be possible. But what are the negative impacts to this problem? Because I am told that we are unable to quantify a long-term impact of GMOs, the health of your human being. Have you been able to work to that? What is the negative impact to an ordinary human being who consume what is contained, in whatever GMO it contains? What is it? Have you been able, both even these multinationals or local research whatsoever? Basically, those are the few things you were in Free State, I don't know whether it's a GMO that was used there. We were sort of there was a crossbreeding of some cattle there, some sheep there. We saw the members, they were very happy to just I remember mom was saying it's beautiful. Because there were two, the other come from the other, and the other, all of us were saying, now I'm thinking, is that not the GMO that we're celebrating, in terms of micro something? Because we're celebrating, we couldn't believe it was science that we knew, that we couldn't understand. Because if that was a GMO, we must be careful to celebrate quickly. Therefore, explain to me some of the things that I'm raising.
I think insofar as I observe, that is the exhaustion of the numbers of hands that were raised before me. I will therefore give it to the departments to respond. But just before they respond, I wanted some clarification myself from trade industry. You said that below 1% is regarded as no GMO. And above 5% is regarded as GMO futile and fertile. Now, what about it between? What happens if it's 2 or 3 or 4? How is it labeled? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to guide the process, obviously we would request the specific department to respond to the issues as they were raised by honorable members directed to their respective departments. But I will request Dr. Yafta to respond to the issues related to the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. But I certainly know that he will need my guidance when it comes to the question asked by honorable Ms. Dane on the issue on the registration and Act 36, and I would like to maybe start with that one and indicate that there has been progress related to the registration. The backlog has definitely been reduced, and unfortunately I cannot give the extent to which it has been reduced, but the last time I interacted with the 36 registrar, he had indicated that most of the backlog had been addressed. I know that I personally had to deal with the issue on infectious bronchitis related to the vaccine, the emergency registration of the poultry vaccine infectious bronchitis, but I've received feedback from the poultry association that it has been attended to. So maybe I can try to get as to the extent of the reduction of the backlog and maybe feedback on that one. Thank you very much, Pastor.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members, for those questions. And perhaps I'd like to start with the last question about the potential GM animal. I've not seen the animal, but I can assure you there's not been any assessment or any approval of a GM animal in our system. However, and I know sometimes that is the some of the questions when we see something out of the ordinary. And it's important to be mindful of the definition as we have it in the Act. The Act is very, very clear to say that, and I'm going to read from it to just to ensure I get everything as stipulated in the Act. The Act says, a genetically modified organism, and mindful that an organism is later defined separately, means an organism, the genes or genetic material of which has been modified in a way that does not occur naturally through mating or natural recombination or both. And genetic modification has a corresponding meaning. So sometimes natural mating, natural processes, natural recombination leads to the generation of something different from something different in the next generation. That's just how diversity is created through the normal biological processes. What genetic modification does, it allows us to use tools, biotechnology tools, to create a very, very specific combination which is not always possible through the natural processes. And therefore one first has to see, to determine whether there was a very direct intervention with the tools of biotechnology and where this specific product is not possible through your natural processes of recombination and the normal process of creating a diversity or a next generation. So my assumption would have to be what you saw was just you've seen the creator at play in bringing about diversity. Okay. Honorable Stain, your question on the why we've not received comments on the this one specific application. Our experience has shown that usually on commodity clearance applications, we do not get a lot of comments. I don't have the data with me, but we can surely draft such a response to show you what is the extent of information that we do receive. But normally, there's more a concern amongst interest groups where there is an environmental release, such as a field trial or general release, but we do get comments. And those are not just comments that we disregard. The council do consider those comments in making a decision, to the extent that often the applicant is requested to provide responses to some of those concerns, or we also make use of our advisory committee to give us an opinion on those comments. In terms of the time frames, the 30-day period is stipulated as per regulation, and at the time that we drew up the regulation, I think what we took was what was the standard and the norm in terms of administrative law at that point. But surely one can look at other ways and means if there is a need to extend that period. What often happens is, and we've seen it from in a number of applications where an interest group may have missed the public notice, and they then request an extension to provide comments, and that is usually granted because we, in an attempt not to put the application at a disadvantage, we negotiate with the applicant to say there's a request for extension of comments. Can we still allow this? And usually the applicants don't have an issue of granting such an extension. But the content of the of what should be in the notice, as I've indicated, is prescribed. And I think we will definitely go back and see to what extent within to what extent can we allow for to have those notices published more widely, as well as in perhaps in other languages. And we will work with DST to see how we can do it. However, the Act is also, you may have seen just those newspapers which we have listed, but the Act tries to ensure that the notification is as wide as possible. As an example, it would say for a general release, it needs to be in national newspapers. For a field trial, you should also publish in newspapers in the area in which the field trial would be taking place. So that does happen. There is also provision for the applicant to provide. There's also provision for the applicant to use other means of notification in areas where they aren't any newspapers circulating. So that does happen. So it is a bit unusual that there has been no public comments. But usually, public comments on commodity clearances, those are a bit limited. In terms of the question around, I think it may be in my presentation where I referred to appropriate fees. There are application fees applicable to the different categories of activities, and those are prescribed, and it is amended annually in line with national treasury rules. Those are the only fees that I would have referred to, but if I'm mistaken, I will definitely clarify that. In terms of what is meant by conditional general release, it means that even after the commercialization of a GMO event, there is still an obligation for the applicant or the holder of the permit to report to us in annual reports as to how much seed was sold, to what extent have they informed the users of the technology, and to also report any unintended adverse effect which may have occurred. Now, the reporting also assists us in terms of the post-market monitoring as prescribed under the Biodiversity Act, and which is a function which was assigned to SANBI, and therefore we call it a conditional general release. The Act also empowers the Council to reconsider any previous decision when new science-based information becomes available. We've not had any instance where we've had to retract a general release of a GMO because of new scientific evidence. It's not that there has not been new evidence. There has been, in cases where evidence was presented, it has been subjected to the system, and ultimately in those instances we found that it's not new relevant science-based information. As you would know, there are continually new information. This is not unique. If you look at the European Food Safety Authority's website, you will see how they report on that they have considered new information in terms of BT11, which is a GMO. However, they concluded that it is still safe. They listed the range of scientific information which they have assessed. We can definitely improve to also then communicate as to that we have considered all of these, this list of new publications that we've assessed, and that information did not change our initial risk assessment. It's also valuable in the sense that it can help us to improve our risk management measures. The comment regarding the robust regulatory system, and as well as to what extent, how does our system compare to other systems in the world? Now, most systems in the world, we have similar elements. there's an initial assessment by, you have the information submitted, you have an assessment by the scientist, but and you have some form of public input. But I think in terms of where we differ, as one example, in South Africa we follow a case-by-case approach. An approval of a single GMO does not necessarily mean that an approval for the stacking of those already approved single events would lead to an automatic approval. We would again subject the stack GMO to our regulatory system. In other systems, if the singles are approved, anything else that you do with those singles, combining them, stacking them in whichever way, is not regulated. In our system, it is again regulated. So often to the frustration of the technology developers, but this is in line with our case-by-case approach. In terms of, yes, there's definitely the briefing limited us really to do that critical analysis which you perhaps require, but that is something that we can definitely do, and it will also then tie in with this question around, you know, how does our system compare with other regulatory systems. I think, Chair, I will stop there. There may be other items that I will pick up. I will just go through my list and come back later. Thank you.
Maybe the other aspect that Dr. Yafta maybe overlooked is the issue on how do we relate the DMOs relate to the registration with Act 36, mainly related to the vaccines. From a point of view of animal health. Maybe I should try and explain that the RB51 issue, which is a vaccine that is used for control of contagious abortion or abortion in cattle, was already registered before the implementation of the GMO Act, but to the best of my knowledge, does not contain any GMOs. But the complaints that have been raised related to the use of the vaccine, up to so far we could not lay a finger on the fact that it is really the inefficacy of the vaccine itself, but it is more related to the use by the particular farmers. Up to so far we haven't detected the other problems related to the efficacy, but I think in his presentation Dr. Yafta did indicate that if a vaccine is believed to be containing or is disclosed in the application to be containing GMO events to a certain extent, before Act 36 analyzes their registration, they forward it to the council for evaluation too. I'm not sure whether Dr. Benjamin will also be looking at the issues raised by Honorable that Banga on the dominance, particularly of the multinationals, and what is happening within the country in terms of developments related to GMOs and use by local companies. Thank you.
Chair, sorry, I've now picked up on two other issues that I've not responded to. We're not used to writing anymore, so writing becomes difficult. In terms of the out of practice, we
we must assure you that also in Parliament we are getting out of writing, are being supplied now with tablets. So we will correspond on tablets, all of us, in future. Thank you.
Jay, you are illegal GMOs. You don't have a permit. I'd like to respond as to what is happening in other parts of Africa. Unfortunately, at some point when the Kenyan story broke, I think we provided a response to Parliament, but perhaps I can't remember in which format we provided a response. I think the development of GM in the rest of Africa is also very difficult sometimes to follow. because the major constraint really is the absence of regulatory frameworks. A number of African countries, and similarly in other parts of the world, have been supported under the UNEP program to develop the regulatory frameworks, but they are still in its infancy. We have collaborated with a number of African countries to assist them, to showcase our system, and that is just an attempt to share our experiences, but it is also obviously also in line with our African development agenda. It was never, you should not construe that as forcing them into this arena. Whenever there are requests, we gladly engage with those delegations and share our experiences. So in a number of countries, there still be absence of regulatory frameworks. However, we are aware that in countries such as Burkina Faso and Egypt, Nigeria, there are already developments in terms of field trials. So it's not that nothing is happening. They are still at the early stages of regulatory development as well as field trial assessments. And in terms of what impact does these GMs have on insects, and the example specifically mentioned was on bees. When we do an environmental assessment, there is a consideration of the potential impact on target as well as non-target species. And if you look at the list that Ben has predicted in terms of some of the research that Biosafety Essay was looking at, it also reflects that there is already research being done to support the regulatory framework here in terms of targets on impacts on target and as well as non-target species. My last point, Chair, as far as the vaccines are concerned, Dr. Mudisani is correct in explaining that an application is submitted and assessed both under Act 36 as well as ourselves. We can at this point say that there is this working relationship also with NCC, because we would not issue a permit for a human vaccine if that vaccine still needs to be evaluated by NCC. So we would do our assessment, make our decision, but the permit, the issuance of the permit is always subject to the applicant providing the NCC approval. So there is that coordination at that level. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I thank the honourable members for their questions. There are a few issues that I will try and deal with, but I'm going to concentrate them so that I address several points at once, because there are several similar points. The first one I'll address is the labelling and the capability for South Africa to label GMO products. But the first point that I want to start off with is that the labelling is a choice issue and it is not a health issue. South Africa does not permit the introduction of GMOs into South Africa that have health implications. I think it's been made very clear by our Department of Health. We reject any application that we consider to have health implications. So the labelling issue then is about choice. What does the consumer feel that they need to have in order to choose which foods they want? And the regulations that were initially introduced by the Department of Trade and Industry, and they can talk more to this, suggested that there needs to be segregation between GM and non-GM products. And to do this, it requires testing at various stages along the value chain. South Africa does have the capabilities to do such testing, particularly at academic institutions. It is not cost-effective because it's an academic exercise, so it's expensive, and it is fairly time-consuming. I'm not exactly sure the time, but it will take a week or so. And the fact is, once the labelling is introduced formally and required, there will obviously be a number of startups that spring up to offer such services, and costs will come down, and the time span associated with that will come down. Nevertheless, there is a cost implication, because it is required at different stages of the food chain, and ultimately, if we are required to label all foodstuffs that may contain genetically modified ingredients, food prices will go up. There are alternative ways of dealing with cost increases. There are cheaper ways of dealing with labeling, and these are being considered by trade and industry in their labeling requirements and labeling regulations. The question then, how many research chairs does the Department of Science and Technology have on biosafety and GMOs? There is no specific research chair yet allocated to biosafety. There are numerous chairs that are allocated to biotechnology-associated things, and obviously there are biosafety components to genetic modification and biotechnology, but nothing specifically to biosafety. In part, the reason for this is that we created the Biosafety South Africa platform, which was there to address the research requirements and expert advice. So we put more focus on the biosafety platform rather than investing money in research chairs. The role of the consumer councils in public awareness, I think this is a good question. The consumer councils generally are not either in favor or against GMOs. They are looking at the nutritional quality and the cost and the nutritional value of the foods. There has been engagement in a variety of fora with the consumer councils of South Africa, either by our public understanding of biotech program or in a fora which involves government. With respect to the cartoon, apologies, it was just meant as an example, but I didn't display it in full size, but the public understanding of biotechnology program has produced a wide variety of easily accessible information in a variety of different languages for South Africa, and I can make you available a selection of such material. Not specifically addressed to DSD, but is South Africa a dumping ground for GMOs? The fact is, the US, a first world country, has had GMOs in commercially available for a lot longer than South Africa, so we are certainly not a dumping ground. Relating to the multinational companies, South Africa has a very robust regulatory system. It's recognized internationally as being quite a thorough process. Part of the problem is that we are making our standards quite stringent, which makes it more difficult for the development and introduction of locally produced GMOs that are specifically relevant to our people. Our standards are high, our standards are very good, but this makes the cost burden for introducing a locally developed variety that much more, which makes it more difficult for us to introduce a locally developed variety. And so a byproduct of this is that it is only multinational companies with deeper pockets that actually can easily afford to introduce GMOs into South Africa. So it appears that there is a dominance by these multinational companies. But the fact is they are held to our very high standards of biosafety. And then I think it was a general question. Is it a positive development that we've had GMOs introduced into South Africa, and are there any negative impacts? The ISAA, the international... Julian, can you help me out? The International Society for the Advancement of Agricultural... ISAA. We will provide it. Is a not-for-profit company that monitors the introduction of GMOs around the world, and they have a report on each country that has introduced GMOs, and they have a figure that they can provide on the financial benefit to South Africa from the introduction of GMOs. So at least there is a financial benefit. Thank you. It's the International Service for the Acquisition of Agri-Biotech Applications. They produce an annual report on a global report, and they can demonstrate that there is a financial benefit to South Africa. Obviously, there's much more than a financial benefit. We're also looking at the use of GMOs for small-scale and subsistence farmers, where they do not have to go out and purchase pesticides to spray their crop, because the pesticide effectively is within the genetically modified crop. So there are specific advantages that can be looked at within GMOs. What are the negative impacts? Well, around the world there are no negative impacts, specifically the health impacts. There have been a number of cases reported in the media and in the scientific journals, but ultimately the scientific consensus, which is the predominance of scientific views, is that genetically modified organisms are no more risky than their conventional counterparts. I think, Chair, those are the main issues that I wanted to deal with. If there are more, I will come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Member. The question that was directed at whether there's been any withdrawal has already been amply addressed by Dr. Tata, so we won't get there. I would like also to assure the committee that in relation to clinical trials that are overseen by the MCC, there is coordination. Our guidance documents make it paramount that we assure ourselves of the safety of the GMO investigational product which we get from Dr. Justin, and then we continue doing our work in terms of other aspects of the clinical trial. And the two that we put on the board there, we do know. In relation, I think it would be proper at this stage, though we were limited by the brief, to quickly go through what we currently have in our labeling regulations as health in terms of GMO modified foodstuffs. Our regulations do cover this, Regulation 25 of 2004, and it does say that the mandatory labeling of GM food that contains a likely allergen that has a different cooking or storage specification as compared to the conventional counterpart is a plant or plant product that contains animal or human genes or proteins, or is an animal or animal product that contains human genes. We already have that in our regulations. And in addition, labeling is required if the composition or nutritional value of the GM food is significantly different from its conventional counterpart. The other issues around if we were to go the mandatory labeling route have been alluded to by Ben. It would require an identity preservation system. We have looked at what happens in other countries carefully, but we didn't bring that evidence in a very robust manner because it was outside our brief. But there are studies that have been conducted in the Philippines, in Australia, and Canada that seem to suggest that this identity preservation system might have an impact on the cost of food. And also, we need, if we go that route, we would need to make sure that we have sufficient muscle for enforcement, we have sufficient muscle for laboratory and inspection facilities. In relation to the question that was raised on the MRLs, I will hand over, and who test and whatever, will hand over to Ms. Campbell. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. In terms of the Foodstuffs Act, the philosophy of it is that it's reactive. It places the onus on anyone who produces or manufactures or sells food to ensure that it's safe. So the liability or the due diligence is placed on the manufacturer to also test. What the Department of Health does is enforces from the perspective of checking. So it might be from a monitoring perspective or from a safety alert perspective or gathering intelligence in terms of receiving concerns about specific issues.
Mr. I'm guided by you at that corner. Do you still have some more responses?
Maybe responses from Chair, from the DTI on the 1% and 5%. I'm not sure if those have been covered.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I think I'll start with the issue of cost. Quite frankly, and in spite of our intensive research, including international comparative research, where the issue of cost has not been really quantified. I think as Ben has alluded to that, at this stage it's difficult to say how this, although there's general consensus that when you require more testing and you require more labeling on a package of products, there could be cost implications, but how really or how much is that going to be is not really quantified. But there are also issues that I want to mention that may actually minimize the issue of cost. Currently in food chain production, we have the traceability report, which to some extent may indicate, even before you go to a laboratory, whether a certain foodstuff has been actually produced using a genetic modification. We have been advised by some scientists or experts in the industry that there are also a less costly method of testing. I don't know if it's called a stick or a strip test, but those are some of the things that can actually be used, which are much cheaper to test the presence of genetic modified organisms in foodstuffs. So, but then again, from our department, we have to balance that against the consumer's right to be informed or to make informed choices, whether it's a cost issue or it's more primarily about the consumer's right to know. And the second question that I would like to respond to is the issue of the difference between all foodstuff and to some foodstuffs. I think Ben has also alluded to, you know, illegal GMOs are not allowed in the country. One of the difficult questions we're to answer as the DTI is to regulate those that have been approved by the GM Council or sort of through the back door regulate everything. Now you have this controversial situation whereby you say, for example, DACA is not allowed in the country, but you regulate it and say, do not sell DACA to under 8-year-olds. So on the one hand, you're saying this is illegal, but in another department, you actually regulate it. So that's part of the reason we came up with regulating only those events that have been identified. I know the opposing views are actually saying that the consumers have the right to know everything, but what is illegal, why regulate it anyway? So in the past regulations, which are or the current regulations are regulating only those events that have been approved for conservation because we don't want to introduce others to the back door. On the issue of between 1 and 5%, we are saying it's up to the importer, producer, retailer to then decide whether to test, and when testing and realizes that the products actually have a GM content below 5%, then they can indicate that the GM content is below 5%. It's part of our regulations. It's to close that gap. So it's not like there's no labeling between 1 and 5, but a producer or retailer or supplier can indicate that the GM content is below 5%. But after 5% or above 5%, it's a compulsory or mandatory requirement. There's a compulsory or mandatory requirement to label as containing GMO. And then below 1%, to allow for the adventitious present, then a supplier can then say the product is GF-free. Thank you, John.
I think, Chair, the team has attempted to cover all the questions that were posed by honorable members. And once more, we'd like to thank members for having asked those questions. We're still not sure whether there's more questions coming.
Thank you very much, Dr. Modisane, and the team, the team with the responses that you have given us. As the chair said before, this is just the first phase. You still have got to run other phases which are more robust, such as public hearings. And that's why your questions also of constitutionality of GMOs, legal aspects, sociological aspects, and ethical aspects, and so many other things are get to be raised, and they need more robust response. So I think for now you need to go and do some more homework for responses of public hearing which are more robust, and wherein we also invite very competent anti-GMO personnel. With that, it would be helpful for us to get such a robust debate, because then we're able to also develop as Parliament a document that safeguards Parliament in terms of what is acceptable in our institution as GMO viable or not GMO viable. And so the public hearing is quite a very important debate that we usually host in Parliament in terms of any matter, but most particularly in this case, GMOs. I'll allow the chair to take over and direct us.
Mrs. Day?
One outstanding question, Chair, that was not answered, but I'm really interested. In, on the DDI slide, it says here, this remains the only country in the world that allows GM varieties of its national staple food to be grown commercially. Is this because of the staple food, or why is this statement in here? Because as far as I know, we are not the only country in the world that allows this to be grown commercially.
Maybe I should just quickly, you might wish to respond on this one, because you see the issue we are about is on GMOs, and any research that happens is in that direction. I'm equally interested, it may not be for now, but if there are any responses, those will be appreciated. So to an extent, I'm looking at the opposite side of things. What then is the research that goes, and how much, if you were to, because you're saying 72% of grain, you know, was GMO based, and to an extent, you also would have been keen on the extent in which work would have been done on organic food. Yes, you are referring to 70%. Of all grain, you know, as of past year, would have been GMO-based. To what an extent are we placing an effort on organic food itself? This could be a question for both agriculture and also science and technology department. You know, not knowing what you know, DTI has to do. This whole discussion pretty much talks to two key issues, as we said earlier on. One of food security, but that food that is safe. To an extent in which, you know, safety measures, health gets to be keenly involved, and also agriculture and science and technology in the research work, you know, that it does. Now, for me, these are the critical questions that we are dealing with. 2050, the continent's numbers shall have been, you know, shall have risen in terms of population, and it shall be expected to produce more food. Whether we shall still be on GMO base, and what effort are we making on the organic food so that we balance our own production in terms of food in the country? You know, becomes my interest. And of course, the issue is raised quite prominently about collaboration. And do we have a center, granted it is agriculture that is leading, do we have a center where there is such collaboration among the departments, where there is constant regular sessions, where the sharing of information and work, you know, is being done going forward? That's what we are really encouraging. You know, more and more. It started off with arithmetic producers, It is now on the mid-labeling, and we hope that as time goes, we shall be able to see more collaboration among departments so that the silo mentality, you know, is done away with soonest. Thanks. Bangai, being the last.
I'm not happy with the multinational. I don't know whether it's because the multinationals we're talking about are international regulated institutions, that it's only them that can deal with the issue of patent. Is it called patent? P-A-T-E-N-T. Yeah, patent rights. Now, your response seemingly is that we are comfortable with the fact that there's multinational domination of the market. And we, my own narrow view on this, because I always accept when I'm not a specialist on something to say first that I'm not, that we have our own national interest in relation to this. Jefferson is raising the issue of focus to organic food, putting it within the context that I was putting, that is this safe? And the negative connotation and the positive connotation. But if we're talking about this kind of domination and research attitude and our local-based patent right authority to develop our own knowledge as South Africans, are we still going to continue to have this kind of domination as a plan to address that? Like, for instance, is this multinational that we're talking about, it's regulated like institutions, welfare organizations, institutions such as that, and we're forced South Africa to follow that trend? Or are we going to have our own institution that would regulate our own General Motors and our own GMs? That's the first one. Because other people say these General Motors, that's why you must be genetic modified organisms. The second one, on the applications, after the applications have been relieved of the approval of the seat, who's responsible for the funding of the trial? Are we responsible, a government, for that kind of a development? Lastly, in terms of food production, what the chairperson is also raising, we are told that by Bill Gates that we have to feed more than 50 billion people in the world. Is this the GMO thing assisting in addressing and putting food and addressing that need in the table in a very affordable, cheap price to the consumer? Thank you. I don't know whether the things I was sent to say, I said them right.
So they are loving you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Dr. Mustane, you want to raise another lobby question? Okay. Very honest.
To be honest, it comes from our researcher. If GME for food security and labeling comes with a cost implication, whose food security is this for? Clearly ordinary people will not be able to afford.
As we said earlier on, this is a beginning. If you like, it's work in progress. Very quite important it is to get departments to respond to the questions, to understand that we're also clarified a lot more. It also prepares us for that petition session and also those hearings wherein everybody else shall be, because it has become very clear that the subject matter we are about has generated a lot of interest. For whatever reason, you could hear and see the hands as they clapped initially, that there is a definite interest on this matter. People come with different backgrounds and also having different interests as well. They are allowed. It's not criminal. Thank you. Dr. Mdina?
Maybe I should ask Mayor Unati's should I make a mistake of pronouncing her name again, to address the question by
Honorable C. And then the other concerns raised by yourself, Chair, and Honorable Banga, will be attended to by Dr. Justin Dr. Zero. And Honorable Mem, I think the Department of Health may address it on the safety aspect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Honourable Stein, I think the question pertaining to our state in South Africa and us being the only country that uses GM stable is based on the fact that 72% of all our seed maize seed is GM. So that makes us the highest country in the world that is stable as GMO. And coupled to that is the question on organic. DAF and DDI have got a program on organic. It's an initiation of ensuring that there is sustainable organic and sustainable organic sector in South Africa. We've recently started an association of South African organic sector, which is in its infancy, which also ensures that there is a non-GMO maize production in South Africa. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the additional questions. Chairperson, on your question about what is the point of collaboration, I think one of our main mechanisms is, in fact, the Council, because the Council does need to consider the applications once every second month, but also beyond that, Council also focuses on what are the international developments and how do we respond to those. Council also helps us to prepare for all of these multilateral engagements which have an impact on GMOs. Equally, from time to time, as the science develops, the Council also coordinates the capacity building initiatives of scientists involved within the system, as well as also for ourselves. So, that is some form of way of there is some mechanism that we use to ensure that all the different departments come together and we address the issue of GMOs in a holistic fashion. I think I'm happy with the responses given by DTI on the organic production. It has been a concern for a long time that we have all the different stakeholders adhering to different standards on organic production, and that is definitely what we try to develop a government-based regulatory system to manage the organic sector, and there's a lot of work being done in that regard. On the question as to who is responsible for the funding of the trials are set up by the respective applicants, and those trials can either be established at their research farms, or they could possibly also contract farmers to undertake the trials for them. But that is for their own cost. But equally, the setup of the trial is also regulated because we want to ensure that the results that are generated does make sense to the regulators. The trials are then visited and assessed by the departmental inspectorate on the intervals as described for the specific crop involved. Thank you.
Thank you to honourable members for further questions. With respect to the multinationals, again, do we foresee them maintaining their dominance into the future? That's how I read the question. I think we need to recognize that the multinationals have particular interests in the commercial crops, the currently ones. So maize and soya, particularly cotton as well, are their domain where they have expended a lot of money into research and development and obtaining the appropriate technologies. Going into the future, I foresee that will continue. They have great interest in the commercial crops. For South Africa, though, we are starting to develop our own GMOs. Supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, there is a project called the Water Efficient Maize for Africa program, where South Africa is conducting some of the field trials. It's not a multinational company-owned intellectual property, although there has been contribution from these companies. We also have at the University of Cape Town here a drought-tolerant maize variety being developed. There will be gradually an increase in the number of locally produced products. The costs are still a big consideration. And looking to the future, but I'm speculating here, and we don't have clear clear data, but it is likely that, well, within government we are trying to find ways of mainstreaming particularly the indigenous crops, the orphan crops of Africa. And the multinational companies do not have specific interests in these because the market size is not big enough, and it is likely that these will be enhanced through biotechnology and possibly even genetic engineering going into the future. So I foresee that the big multinationals will maintain a dominance over the commercial crops, but it is likely that there will be some inroads made into that by other countries, and specifically with regards to Africa's orphan crops, the indigenous crops, they're very unlikely to maintain to develop a dominance there. The question about food security going into the future, into 2050, where the population is estimated to be, the global population is estimated to be about 9 billion, 2 or so billion more mouths to feed than there are today. There is a very clear correlation between the advent of biotechnology and the increase in food supply. It's something called the Green Revolution, which is a fairly well-known term, where biotechnology generally, and I'm not talking specifically about genetic modification, but biotechnology generally allowed the increase of food supply to keep a pace with the increasing population. Since the 40s, 50s, the food supply, despite negative predictions, was able to keep up with the demand because of biotechnology, and genetic modification is one of the tools within biotechnology, and it is undoubtedly assisting in that process. It's not the sole solution at all. Biotechnology is a broad set of tools. Genetic modification is one of the tools that will assist with food security. And ultimately, to feed 2 billion more mouths, we have to look at all possible technologies and techniques and practices to improve food production. Thank you, Chair.
We should adjourn as of now. Having had all of those questions and answers, I think we should appreciate and thank the departments for the effort to come and with us publish because of the law on themselves, it's so fabulous. When they can turn the GMOs, I think that should be appreciated. We still must go through another process wherein we entertain the rest of the other sessions, both on the petition and also opening it up for everybody else to come and present views and from experience, of course. We've also received a few other correspondences. I have here another one. And again, the point is made here, these processes are quite open and they're transparent. And this is a platform wherein we can come all together. To an extent, we're making recommendations. If called upon, any adjustments or amendments to any legislation, Parliament is open to that. So we are not dealing with any, you know, situation where we are stuck to what is there in terms of legislation. We are open. We need to be convinced, and those processes will take their own due course. We also had in plan an adoption of our program. Having just looked at our numbers here, we are fine in terms of numbers, but it depends on us whether we want the agriculture committee strictly, what's the English word, English being my seventh language, corating. That's the English word I was looking for. Now, thanks, department, and just reading the body language among members here, we are not continuing with our talking of our program. But as of next week, the 17th of September, we have been having NEHA coming before us on their responses on options. The department must bring us options as to help us to move forward. Having expressed our view as a committee, and the department has to come before us. Secondly, also the department together with health with the department of, and also trade and industry. We're supposed to get a feedback. Last time we met, we were meant to have had a feedback again on the mid-labeling. Mr. Stain always wants to call it mid-scandal. Mid-labeling, otherwise you're calling it mid-scandal because it's happening all over the world. Labeling. There are views that there is a process. We have been informed, Dr. Ndisane. So next week on Tuesday, we shall have that those briefings both on NEHA, on the various options that have to be brought to the committee, and secondly, what happened and what transpired on the collaboration between the health, trade industry, and agriculture departments on the mid-labeling and inspection. Those are the items for next week on Tuesday. For now, thank you very much, and wish you enjoy 13th of Friday. Meetings adjourned. I'm aware you would have loved stop at 1 o'clock. That's why you're still wondering. And perhaps we can... Unfortunately, we stopped earlier. Just to add, remember,